Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Movie Mastery. It's the show where we're watching the movies that you tell us to. We are back. I am John, your host. With me, as always, my co-host, Jeff.
Hey there.
This time around, we are doing that absolute amazing buddy cop film, Tango and Cash.
Where has this been all my life? I feel like it's weird that we were requested to watch this because I feel like everybody I know ever has seen it. But also, I hadn't seen it, so it's a perfect choice.
Yeah, no, I had never seen it. And the thing is, I feel like in my mind, I had a different idea of what this movie was.
Oh, you want to hear a sad realization? This is a couple of years old now, but about 2 years ago, I realized that Tango and Cash and Turner and Hooch are different movies when I watched Turner and Hooch for the first time.
I feel like I have that same thing, except it's Starsky and Hutch.
That's not even a movie. Or wait, did it eventually become one? I can't remember.
It is a movie.
I thought it was like a long-running TV show. Okay, I guess that shows what I know.
We're so good at knowing buddy cop things.
I don't much care for buddy cop stuff. It's not my specific jam.
Anyway, it was a TV series. It became a movie. I want to say, what was that, Ben Stiller?
Yeah, I was going to say that there is a movie, but it's like Ben Stiller and some other guy. I want to say maybe a Wilson?
One of them Wilsons?
Like a Luke or an Owen type Wilson?
Wilson!
It might have been Wilson, you know, acting the entire thing out from behind his fence in Tim the Toolman Taylor's backyard.
It might have been, because I'm not going to watch it unless you force us to.
I feel like that's the kind of movie where you get, who was that who starred in that? David Soul to show up in the last 5 seconds of the movie on like a motorcycle or something, just like how a Chips movie would do.
Yeah. So Tango and Cash is 1989, and it is a one of those like buddy cop films, but more in the sense that they're antagonistic. So you have that whole idea of like, oh, it's the by the book and then the crazy loose cannon. But man,
except they're both crazy loose cannons.
I was going to say, I feel like this is late enough because it's 89 and the feel of this movie, without even getting into any spoilers for it, this almost feels like it's on the cusp of being a parody.
Yes, it very much does feel like a parody. Everybody in it is doing the most of themselves that they can.
Things in it is like, oh, we know exactly what every trope is, and we are going to hit them as hard as possible.
I don't know which one came first between this and Batman 89, but it really feels like Palance was just, because Palance is the bad guy in this, he's doing the exact same thing where he's got that imposing creep breath. If you're used to having the, you're my number one a guy kind of shit, he's just doing that all the way through this in the exact same way, which suggested to me that either he always does that or this is kind of a send-up.
Yeah, I mean, the Lethal Weapon movie came out 2 years before this.
Mm-hmm.
And I almost want to say that this is straight up a response to that because it really does feel like someone was making a parody, but then they didn't tell anyone else. So it's like everyone was trying to play this as straight as possible, but the movie itself is a parody.
Right. This is breaking my mind, by the way. I thought that, with few exceptions, Sylvester Stallone wrote every movie he was in. But in this one, he's not the writer.
No.
So that lends itself more to the idea that this is sort of a parody, or at least sort of a genre parody, because I wouldn't have thought he would be willing to write himself into a parody character. Although, then again, he made, like, fucking Rhinestone and shit, so what do I know?
Yeah. I mean, we're going to get into it in a bit, but I'm going to say, if you are already a fan of the type of, like, super over-the-top action film, buddy cop, explosions, and, you know, we gotta clear our name type movies, this is so good as both an example of that and a send-up of it at the same time. I can't imagine not liking it if you were already into it.
Yeah, and if you already are into that, then there's no way you haven't seen this. This is like your template film. It's very fast. Also, I gotta say, the thing about this movie that amazed me was how much of a formulaic writing it is. where it's straight. It's every single line is set up punchline. Every single line that our main characters have.
Oh, it's true.
They are Statler and Waldorfing at each other as hard as they can.
No, there is no wasted space in this. Mm-hmm. Every single line that our two main characters have are either a setup or a punchline. There is nothing else.
Yeah, it's an impressive commitment to having every character never not be quipping.
Oh, yeah. You know what? Let's go ahead and get into it. We're going to do our full spoiler in-depth review. Play a little music, and then we will be right back with everything you need to know about Tango and Cash.
He had it coming. He had it coming. He only had himself to blame. If you'd have been there, if you'd have seen it, I bet you would have done the same.
Five, six, squish.
We're back, and it is time to talk about Tango and Cash.
Reunited, and it feels so good. Well, I mean, we did miss like a pair of episodes in there.
So. A pair of episodes?
We did. Remember, we did. Well, okay. Maybe not a pair of movie mastery episodes. Maybe I'm pulling back the curtain a little bit here, John. Did you know that you and I, the John who and Jeff who record Movie Mastery, are the same John and Jeff that record Expounded Universe?
I didn't know that.
Well, this is just a little industry insider secret, folks. We're the same two guys. And we missed a couple episodes. So it's good to be back.
Oh, man. This movie.
It's the tale of the two best cops in San Francisco. I think it's supposed to be
Los Angeles.
Los Angeles? Because, all right, fair enough. There's a point where they say a line where they lost them down around Victorville, and I was like, all right, where's Victorville south of? But yeah, you know what? It's also south of L.A., isn't it?
Well, it's north of L.A.
Oh, well, then maybe
but
I'm it right.
It was when they were on their way to prison.
Ah, okay.
Which, spoiler alert.
But yeah, it's the two best cops in all of Los Angeles. They can do anything except accept help from any other cops.
Yeah, both of them they work alone, and they're two different districts. So it's not like they're directly competing with each other. They only know about each other because they're both, like, hero cops.
Yeah, I thought that was an interesting choice. They pretty much say that Ray Tango, otherwise known as Sylvester Stallone, takes East L.A., while Kurt Russell's character, Gabriel Cash, is the best cop in West Los Angeles.
Oh, but yeah. They've split the whole city in half like it's Berlin.
But it's interesting because there's not really a lot of sense that that means anything. Like, I was expecting, okay, if Kurt Russell works West Los Angeles, that means he's working, like, West Hollywood and shit like that. But no, it's just, they all just fight dirt bags on roads and in parking garages. It's just that.
Oh, yeah. And, of course, the main joke with the names is there's a rich one and a poor one, but the poor one's name is Cash.
Can we talk? I mean, it starts on Ray Tango anyway, and his driving around in a non-cop car, chasing down a tanker truck full of cocaine.
Just chasing down a tanker truck full of Robert Zadar.
Robert Zadar. You might as well say that before we say anything else. If you like 80s character actors, this movie has every single good one.
It is packed to the gills. Like, you start the movie and you're like, oh shit, it's Robert Zadar. Mm-hmm. Neat. And then literally every scene introduces another character actor. You're like, what is going on here? At the end of the movie, they threw up the casting by, and I was like, my dude, you have done your job.
Yeah.
This was a movie that was made specifically to give every character actor a paycheck.
Yeah. I mean, when you see the car that has the bad guys in it, and it's Jack Palance dressing down James Hong and Mark Alimo, otherwise known as DS9's own Gold Ducat, and you're just like, fuck, that's such an important car. I want to be in that car so bad.
The whole thing is amazing. Like, everything in this movie just, oh, I know who that is.
Yeah.
I know who that is.
The whole time.
I know who that is.
Little minor characters who have like two lines. You're like, oh shit, that's Broadway's own Michael Jeter.
It's amazing.
I know who that is. Oh, this movie's got heavy business.
This movie has a sprinkling of heavy business.
Oh, it's so exciting. But anyway, to get back to the 2 points that I was trying to get to earlier, Sylvester Stallone is chasing down a tanker truck on a freeway. He is refusing any help from any other cops because it's his bust, goddammit.
Oh, yeah. Even, like, I can almost understand when he's like, oh, we're outside our jurisdiction and they're sending in, like, the highway patrol and the sheriff's office from wherever they are because they're clearly outside of L.A. in, I want to say, some sort of deserty road that's going to be like either the Grapevine going up or going out to like Coachella or something. And I can almost understand the action movie logic of like, oh no, this is my bust. Mm-hmm. I don't want to get the local police involved, but there's a helicopter from Tango's own like precinct, I guess, following. And he's like, fuck you, helicopter. Get out of here.
You stay back. This is my bust. And how does he do the bust? Why, he pulls around the truck, gets out of his car, pulls a tiny little pistol out, and just starts shooting at them while, like, to the point where Robert Zadar, the driver of the truck, is like, this guy's crazy!
There's a point when he gets out where he gets his tiny-ass revolver out, mm-hmm. dumps the bullets out of it, and then puts new bullets in there.
Yeah, I'm still very curious as to what that was. Were those supposed to be spent casings, or what are we doing here?
I honestly, what I thought he was doing was like, oh, I'm going to dump all the bullets out but one, because I only need one bullet. But then he dumped all of them out and then just put in new bullets, and I'm like, what are those better bullets?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe there was a special important bullets so the other ones were regular state. Maybe the other bullets weren't even bullets. He just doesn't like to leave his gun empty. So he had like some bullets.
Just had like mints in there.
But yeah, he's shooting at the truck. He never does hit Robert Zadar, but he's just very calmly in the path of the truck shooting at it. And then eventually Robert Zadar, his character's name is Face, which is very inappropriate. Like not the best, by the way, for a guy with Robert Zadar's catcher's mitt of a face. But he just goes, that guy's crazy, and slams on the brakes so bad that he flings himself through the windshield of the truck.
Yeah, I think the last shot that Stallone fires is either at the tire or the engine or something. Mm-hmm. So it's like both the brakes and the fact that he has fucked up the truck somehow. But I was like, all right, neither of you are wearing seatbelts? That's very weird.
Yeah. And so, anyway, it's a bust. The local sheriff's office is dressing him down, blah, and eventually what they learn is that there's coke hidden in the truck. So he's like, hey, I'm a hero again, huh? And then he goes back to his office where there's a woman there.
Hold on.
No, please, go ahead.
Hold on.
Yeah.
First, of course, they have to dress him down because they only find gasoline, and then
oh, he just shoots the truck, yeah.
He just shoots the truck where he assumes cocaine is.
Yeah.
And it comes pouring out. But also, there is the important line of, who does this guy think he is? He thinks he's Rambo.
Right.
And we get Stallone saying, Rambo's a pussy.
Yeah, let me tell you something. Rambo's a fucking pussy. You're just like, oh, come on, man. You don't need to do that for this movie.
This movie didn't deserve that.
Rambo's your moneymaker, buddy. You're still making them.
Ugh.
Ain't no one making Tango and Cash 2.
I mean, I can definitely see someone remaking Tango and Cash. Don't get me wrong there.
No, that's fair. That is very fair. But anyway, in his office, there's Terry Hatcher is there, and we're not supposed to be sure of what their relationship is. That's a big setup all the way through.
Oh, yeah.
But
well, I mean, it wants you to think
they're together.
That Terry Hatcher is his girlfriend, because the entire scene is like, oh, why are you leaving? Why you gotta go and not tell me where you're going? Oh, I worry about you, honey. Oh,
at least leave me a phone number where I can reach you. And she's like, no. And then she blows him a kiss. So we're supposed to be like, he's getting dumped again, but he doesn't have time for it because he's too busy with stock market stuff. Because here's the thing. He is only a cop because he likes to murder people and bust bad guys. He is also a rich stockbroker and he dresses like one.
Oh, yeah. He has the whole thing with him is, oh, he's super wealthy, he dresses well, he's got, you know, nice car, nice house. He is only doing this not as a job, but just because he literally says to, like, his police captain or whatever, oh, I'm just doing this for the action.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just bored.
So what I gotta say here is, this didn't really work on me. I was worried that Terry Hatcher was gonna be his, like, daughter, or something, because ultimately it's a pretty, any way you slice it, it's a pretty misogynistic old scene of him being like, hey, you shouldn't leave town. It's only safe in the town I'm safe in. But the thing is, and I think this resonates throughout the movie, and maybe you can call me crazy or not, it resonates gay all the way through this.
Okay.
You didn't pick, am I alone on that?
I don't know. I didn't really pick anything up on that, but sure.
No, to me, he is very clearly a very confident, murderous gay cop. And I was excited about that. I mean, he's wealthy. He dresses well. Every time someone makes fun of him with a gay slur, and let me tell you, that happens a lot of this movie. It's never really slurs. It's always just like, hey, what are we married now? Or, hey, I'm looking at your dick, guy. Or, hey, kiss my ass, or suck my dick, private, or whatever to him. And he's always just like, are you making a proposal? I prefer blondes. Maybe we can set up a date for later. But it's always deadpan responses. And to me, I was like, wait, this guy's no-nonsense gay, isn't he? That's fucking awesome.
I'm fine with that reading, honestly.
There's never a point where he gets mad or fires back. He always responds with a generic sarcastic rebuttal, just like, oh, okay, I guess are you asking if you want to marry me? Is this as close as he gets?
I was actually going to say, honestly, the fact that this movie doesn't have a lot of, like, super homophobic stuff, and there is a point where Kurt Russell's Cash cross-dresses, and we don't get a lot of trans panic in it, I was like, good job, movie. You didn't do it.
No, that's true. There is a scene where he cross-dresses. They do the standard panning up to show a big pair of legs and then an even bigger woman. And, oh, my God, it's Kurt Russell. And, of course, some dope cop is immediately like, a hubba, hubba. You know, that's the trans panic we get, is that the cop who's like, ooh, I'm specifically into big, muscly women.
Oh, yeah. Well, he's just like, what are you, some kind of yoga instructor?
And then when the other character is helping him escape the situation, Terry Hatcher again's like, hey, stay away from my property. The cop's just like, oh, are you guys into a three-way maybe? What do you say? Huh?
Yeah, no, there's no point where he's like, you're one ugly broad.
Yeah, and there's
or a point where someone like, that chick's got a penis. Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, and also another thing I appreciated was that When Terry Hatcher's like, hey, that's my girlfriend, leave her alone, there's not like, oh, I see, a couple of dykes. We don't get that shit. It's okay. It's not great, but it's okay.
Everything is medium level.
Anyway, yeah, we established that he's the rich cop. It's not really crazy cop, sane cop. It's rich cop, poor cop.
Yeah, because when we go see Kurt Russell's Cash, he is just... like, he lives in a rundown apartment building, he dresses like a slob, and he's got,
desk is full
like,
of candy.
Trash all over the place.
Yeah. Now, to be fair, he's poor, he's movie poor, because, yeah, he does complain that he's like, my shirt costs $9, but he carries a pistol that has, like, another pistol strapped to the top of it, and he drives a 69 Corvette.
I mean, the great thing about his gun is that it's... like a laser sight on top of there, and it is the size of the gun.
Oh, no, yeah, it's like it's the late 80s. Laser sights weren't really that big of a thing yet. He's got a Ruger, and it looks ridiculous. It looks like there's nowhere he could possibly holster it, because, yeah, it's got like a whole extra gun up top.
Oh, yeah, it's just double gun, and I'm like, how do you even aim with that thing on there? Jesus!
Well, I mean, it is a laser pointer, so there's that. And he is getting in a fight with some Chinese assassin guy in a parking lot, and it's just a straight up.
Well, I like that first scene where they go in, and of course they also gotta try and make it so that Kurt Russell, being the poor one, is the out of shape one, which doesn't really work because he's
right.
Kurt Russell.
Yeah, they make these like occasional cracks about his beer belly or whatever. You're like, fuck you, buddy. That's Kurt Russell.
Oh, yeah, because they're like, oh, yeah, fucking Tango, oh, he hits the gym all the time. Look at that muscle head. Not like me, Kurt Russell. You're like, what? No. Because the whole scene starts with him in front of the mirror, like, trying to suck his gut in before the assassin, like, shoots through the glass in his closet door.
Yeah.
It's one of those things in the movie where I'm like, all right, sure, guys, whatever.
You do
I'll
what
buy
you
into your dumb nonsense.
Yeah. So he gets into a ridiculous vehicular destruction fight with this assassin guy.
Oh, yeah. And of course, he has to commandeer a vehicle, but it's 1989 and it was from a Russian, so it's okay.
Yeah, the Russian's just like, hey, you mean guy. That's a horrible accent.
That was my car.
Hey, my car, perestroika.
Welcome to America, bud.
Yeah, everything's a joke. The scene when he gets back to the office and he's just like, they shot me through my shirt. This was a $9 shirt. And then he sees a pizza and he yells, pizza! And runs over to steal some. I was like, shit, this guy's a Ninja Turtle.
I mean, you're not wrong.
Yeah, it's a gay murderer and Ninja Turtle, the movie, and I'm way into it.
And we also have our main villains. Mm-hmm. That, as was mentioned, Jack Palance and Gul Dukat
and James Hong.
And James Hong.
Oh, man, and that is great.
It is amazing because Jack Palance is just full ham. As was mentioned, yeah. He's just like, you have to understand the games that I play. And
yeah.
The other two are like, all right.
Yeah, it's great because both of them are, they're not really playing, you know, straight men here. They're not dialing it down, but it's Jack Palance at full resonance. And so,
oh yeah,
he cuts you.
They're just like, can't we kill these guys? It would be easy. Easy is how you make an omelet. And you're like, what are you talking about?
So it turns out that he runs like all the drugs in all of Los Angeles. Does Jack Palance's character Perrette? And so the constant thorns in my side are these two cops, and he's like, we need a plan.
Tango and Cash. Cash and Tango.
We gotta take him off the table. And his plan is he's gonna get the two of them locked up. He's gonna frame them for a murder, get them locked up, and he does the whole thing. This is my favorite fucking part of the movie, is remember the mice?
Oh, yeah. Like, he's talking to his two lieutenants, which are Quan and Lopez are the name, and we know that Tango and Cash know them, and he's sort of the kingpin behind the scenes is Perrette.
Yes.
But, like, he gets two, like, rats out and is like, and this is Tango and this is Cash. Yeah. And then he just puts them away in a box again?
Yeah, you keep expecting he's going to squish them or throw them at the wall or something like that, you know, to really show that he's an evil, you know, villain. But instead, he just puts them away. And, yes, he gets them out later in a follow-up scene, but I kept expecting... I kept hoping that was it. That he'd just pull out the mice and be like, this is Tango. This is Cash. I'm putting him away. They're done.
That's it. I just happen to have these two mice. Anyway.
I made my point. But mostly he just thinks the mice are pretty. Like, he likes mice, and he has a big, expensive maze for his mice.
Oh, yeah, because he's like, oh, the whole thing is, we can't kill them. They're already heroes. That'll make them martyrs. We gotta put them in a maze, take them out of the picture for a while. And you're like, okay, sure.
Yeah, it's weird because his plan is to put them in prison for a while so that they'll be out of the way while he does some sort of super important major big deal drug plan. But then as soon as they're in prison, he shows up to kill them.
It's so, God. all right, whatever.
We got to get through it, though.
Yeah, so his whole plan is the assassin that went after Kurt Russell will tell Cash that there's, you know, a big meeting going down and that's the person who hired him is going to be there. And then Tango just gets his captain comes in and is like, hey, you got to go over to this place. We had a phone tap that told us something was going down here.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how they get both of them to go to the same place. But oh, it's a setup. There's a dead FBI guy there, and they get framed for the murder of him because they're supposed to be dirty now.
Oh, and also they immediately don't like each other. They've heard of each other. They're like, you know, Stallone has to be like, I've heard you're the number two cop in Los Angeles. Oh, that's funny. I've heard the same thing about you.
Oh, that's strange. I've heard the same about you.
I see we've established our relationship. Pretty soon, let's talk about comparing our dick sizes.
For way too long.
For an incredible amount of time.
But yeah, they get set up, and there are so many people that are in on this setup.
Oh, yeah.
That, like,
it's like half the force.
We get we get like two different FBI agents at least.
Mm-hmm.
The one who was in charge of the investigation and at least one more who was part of it.
Yeah.
And then we get the sound expert.
Yeah, a crooked sound engineer played by Michael Jeter. I was very excited to see him.
Oh, yeah. We get, what was the, Roy Brocksmith is one of the crooked agents.
Yeah, he plays one of the two, and that's another character where, like, that's a character actor you probably know, but don't know you know.
Oh, if you'd see him, you'd be like, oh, yeah, I know him from everything. You know, for me, I immediately went, oh, Total Recall, but yeah. He's in a lot of stuff.
Total Recall, I think, is the one that most people hit for this character, but it was, or this actor, but it's awesome to see him anyway. And then, yeah, you've got Michael Jeter, who, for me, first and foremost, is one of the Mr. Noodles on Elmo's World on Sesame Street.
Yes. Immediately, I was like, what is Mr. Noodle doing here?
Well, first of all, that's Mr. Noodle's brother, Mr. Noodle. The original Mr. Noodle, if you want to find the original Mr. Noodle, you just watch Legion.
Mr. Noodle is my dad, please.
Original Mr. Noodle is one half of the Carries on Legion.
Duh.
The older dude one. So, anyway, yeah, they get set up by just everybody. And two of them are like, yeah, we're obviously being set up. There's nothing we can do about it. We're being railroaded. We'll figure it out, clear our names eventually. But they accept, rather than fighting for their innocence, they just accept a plea deal.
Oh, yeah, because they're like, oh, there's no way we can get around this. There's too many people involved in this setup. Like, all of this evidence, because, like, a tape gets played that has them essentially just talking about, like, oh, yeah, do you have the drugs? We're going to kill you now.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, okay. So we are literally, like, fake evidence set up.
Yeah. Yes, I'm Michael Jeter, and I can confirm that I have that tape and that I used an oscilloscope.
I used an oscilloscope.
To compare. The whole time I was going, oscilloscopes don't do that. But whatever.
My oscilloscope said these voices are exactly the same.
I checked for my accuracy on a lava lamp. I also used a computer mouse to determine the two voices are the same voice.
Well, you're the expert.
Indeed I am. And they get, the whole thing is they're supposed to get sent to, like, minimum security federal resort prison for hero cops.
Yeah. They're like, oh, we're going to go to the minimum security place where, you know, there's a gym and a golf course or whatever. We can just hang out and it's not going to be a problem. But oh no, they get sent to federal ass-kicking prison.
Yeah, they get sent to the worst prison ever.
Why, I sent half of these guys here.
Yeah, and that's the whole idea, is that they just get put into a prison where they sent all the inmates and they'll get murdered there. And we just get, this is where we get the way too long of dick stuff sequence.
Yeah, when they show up, they're like, oh, well, you know, you gotta, I guess, go through a shower together for some reason. And they're just having a conversation in there, of course, where Kurt Russell's like, oh, I gotta try and figure out who framed us. I bet it was Lopez who did it. But for about a good minute to 2 minutes of this conversation is them just being like, hey there, Pee-wee, what your dick is, whatever, tripod.
Yeah, whatever you
penises.
Say that, Minnie Mouse.
It's just
just back and forth, just all these dick talks. And there's even a part where Kurt Russell drops below the line of visibility and comes back up, but he's like, "Hey, I dropped the soap."
He's like, whoa, don't flatter yourself there.
It just goes on for so long. And then, yeah, they get walked through the prison, which is on fire.
Like, I love that.
That's the best.
Like, people are throwing stuff and there's, like, fires set. I'm just going, you know, even if they'd paid off, like, the entire prison to be like, oh, yeah, every single guard here we paid to be like, yeah, let these two die. Why would they allow there to be fires set? Like, there's an entire prison cell that is just fire at some point.
Yeah, they're walking through it's supposed to look like Escape from L.A. or something. Just endless fire in every direction. And just garbage cans full of fire and burning newspaper. And obviously, even the couple of criminals that we've already seen are also here. So we get to see Robert Zadar right away again.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, of course, they go into separate cells and Cash gets to hang out with a big black guy
who won't let him use the bathroom.
Yeah. And Tango gets to hang out with some heavy business.
Aw, it's old Clint Howard. Our good pal Clint E. Howard is here.
Clint Howard shows up with some slinky business.
Yeah, he's got a slinky, and he's clearly aware of who Tango is, and he's like, I'm not scared of you. I killed my best friend. They say if you kill your best friend, it means you're the most crazy. Hey, I'm talking to you. And he's just doing business.
Yeah. Well, I mean, at least I understand. If you're in a prison like we just saw, where apparently everyone's allowed to just make fires and everyone's a giant muscle monster, and you're Clint Howard, you got to be like, oh, I need a thing that makes me seem crazy.
Yeah.
So my thing is a slinky. I just continually use a slinky. Everyone's going to think I'm nuts, and maybe no one will mess with me.
Yeah. And he does indeed try to mess with Tango, who is just trying to read the stock reports in a newspaper.
Oh, what do you know? Sugar's up.
I got to call my broker. And then, you know, it's just that kind of shit until the two of them get sheeted and dragged out in the middle of the night by a bunch of cops. What am I saying? Criminals who drag them down into the laundry room where they are going to torture them and murder them. And also, just for fun, I guess Jack Palance and his main man, Breon James, are going to show up to be part of this.
Yeah. Oh, God. Like,
very Batman.
I understand the idea of, like, oh, we're going to, like, bribe whoever to get them into a prison and put them in Gen Pop so that, like, all of these guys that they had put here will kill them. Like, okay, that way at least you don't make them martyrs against you. Mm-hmm. It's just, oh, we smeared their name and then they died in prison. Okay, good idea. But the idea that, like, ah, yes, I'm the hidden behind-the-scenes super guy that nobody knows about, it's time for me to show up to some prison torture. You're like, why?
I mean, in his defense,
you'd
he think is...
You'd just be like... Hey, guy, here's a shiv, stab this dude.
Yeah, and in Palance's defense, he is very good at standing in face-obscuring shadows. Like, he has...
Oh, yeah, well,
that
you
is
have
a,
to.
That's a skill he has mastered. I'm almost a little disappointed that he didn't show up with the mice for this scene. He'd be like, ah, you're Tango. I've got a mouse named after you. Here he is. This one's Tango, and this one's Cash. And he just puts them in the box.
They're so cute.
I always bring my mice. I thought you'd like to meet some mice.
It's my number one, a mouse.
But we also, at this point, get to really meet Breon James, another awesome character actor, as his primary enforcer, doing... I don't know if Breon James is American or what. He's American in every other thing I've ever seen him in, but here, he is an awful British accent.
Oh, no. He was born in California, but they decided to be like, hey, we want you to be British, and not just any British. We want you to be pure limey, eh, what?
Yeah, so he's supposed to be like a Cockney British assassin named Rakim, and it is a mixed performance.
It is, it's definitely something to watch. It honestly just adds to the whole over-the-top spectacle of this to be like, yeah, we decided this guy would be British for... literally no reason. It has no bearing on anything, but we just decided.
It doesn't help, and he's terrible at it. We'll just go ahead and put that out there. His British accent's about as good as my British accent.
Oh, yeah. It's basically, I feel like he showed up to set and was like, hey, I've been working on my British accent. You mind if I make this guy British? And the people in charge of it were like, I could not give less of a fuck.
It does not matter if your character is British. Read the lines the same way you would, and just put governor in them now instead of fucker. Okay, does that work for you?
Yeah, just anytime you want, I throw in some sort of British slang, I guess, and we'll be fine. I don't care. Have you read this script?
How much coke do when he gets his first line of the movie, and he's like, pip, pip, governor, cheerio, I'm going to slit your throat, I is. And they were like, yeah, fuck yeah. Cut, print, we did it.
Yeah,
that's
no,
it.
I'm into it.
That's what British people talk like, right?
James, come here. I gotta tell you, that was fucking amazing. We're doing this. I love everything about it. Hey, can everyone do British now?
You know what? The whole movie's set in Britain. We're changing everything.
You know what? It's a period piece now. Tango and Cash, 1895.
We're calling it Lord Tango and Sir Cash.
But yeah, they get messed up by prisoners until the one non-crooked, like, not the warden, but like the vice warden of the prison shows up and is like, hey, now you get those guys down. And, you know, even though I'm second in charge of this entire prison, I have no way to make it so you're not in general population or at the prison you should be, because apparently I can't use a phone to call anyone.
Yeah, that was the thing that was really, really driving me nuts, was that he didn't just go like, oh, okay, I will call your precinct and let them know you're in here.
Yeah, just be like, oh, I'm going to go ahead and call up and let them know that there was a mistake here and that you shouldn't be here. No, he was like, okay, the only thing we can do, because I have no other power, is I can show you how to escape.
Yeah, I'm setting you up on a daring escape. And I'm surprised neither of them was just like, or you could call our captain, because we're not supposed to be in this prison, and it would be very quick if he asked for a transfer to the right prison. Like, yeah, it would happen just, within the hour. It'd be almost, like, literally, because it wouldn't take that. He'd just call us and be like, they're not supposed to be in there. Put them in one of your cars and take them to the right prison. It'd be very, very fast. And he's like, that's impossible.
It'd be so fast.
We got to escape through a big fan.
I'm going to stop one of the fans, and you got to go through there in a little water air tunnel, and you have to break a concrete brick to get into the tunnel, and you're like, what? Why don't you? Okay, whatever. Sure, buddy.
You gotta slide down these big power lines that are constantly making huge sparks. You gotta do every single one of these horrible things. It's gonna be like The Rock. Or you could make one phone call.
Nah, can't do it.
And notably, Tango's not into it. He's like, no, fuck you, buddy. I'm not escaping. That's stupid as hell.
He's like, I don't trust you. This is clearly a trap. That we're going to go through this escape tunnel and on the other end, some dudes will murder us. No.
Yeah. But Cash is like, hell yeah, I'm not getting murdered in here. I'm going to escape.
I trust this guy. He was in my unit or something.
Yeah, he was
his CO.
He was a CO for a number of years. But then that guy just immediately gets killed. And it turns out that the leader of the kill these people in this prison task force is Robert Zadar. So now Robert Zadar gets to have his big moment in the sun, chasing Tango around and being like, Tango!
So they take a different exit out of the prison that Tango had originally seen on the plans and was like, why don't we just do this? And he's like, nope, you gotta go the other way. So they go that way. And Cash manages to get out, like using a belt to slide down a power line across the walls.
Oh, their escape is amazing. There's a point where they have to escape through one of those big fans from the Wonka factory. I mean,
they gotta like work their way through power for the prison where it's got like exposed electric wires and there's just enough space for them to walk sideways through.
Mm-hmm. They're just constantly getting shocked in this movie. But yeah, they have to jump like 50 feet off of a prison roof onto a exposed power line that's sparking constantly in the rain and then slide down it into a pine tree.
Yes. Cash makes it, but of course Tango has to have his final confrontation with Zadar and manages to push him into the aforementioned exposed power lines that they had to get through, and good, he gets killed and they both get out of prison and go their separate ways.
Yes, because they can't be seen together, it wouldn't be safe. I do appreciate that when Zadar dies, he has exactly enough mental faculty left to yell Django.
Oh yeah, obvious. I mean, when I die, I hope I have that level of presence of mind to yell Tango.
Is that your plan? Is that your last word is going to be Tango?
Oh, obviously.
I think that's necessary now. Yeah, you're definitely not wrong in saying so.
I just want someone to be like, what does it mean? Is this like his rosebud?
Why did he underline penguins in this book over and over again? And also Tango.
Okay. But yes, now have to go do their own separate investigations on what happened to set them up.
But there is a connection. If you need to find Tango again, you go to this one nightclub and you ask for Catherine.
Yeah, you go to the Cleopatra Club and ask for Catherine, and that's how you'll get a hold of me, Cash. I'm Tango, and you're Cash.
So each of them goes off to do their own part of the invest, like to shake down people who betrayed them and get information as to who the big bad is. So Cash heads off to investigate Michael Jeter and basically just bullies a nerd.
Yeah, and Tango decides to go after the crooked FBI agent that set them up.
Yeah. Tango doesn't get as much. He finds out that, yes, they were set up, that it was obviously a setup. The guy made a lot of money, but the guy tries to escape and blows himself up in a car bomb.
Yeah, because he's like, oh, it doesn't matter. They want to kill me now, too. But he tries to get away from Tango, but his car was rigged to blow.
Yeah.
But Cash gets fucking everything. He's just like, hey, nerd, I know you fucking set us up. You big nerd, where's my goddamn money?
Tell me everything, or I will shoot your stereo equipment. And in the meantime, I will shoot your stereo equipment.
I did like when he was like, oh, I bet you got paid a lot. Maybe you can get some better equipment that isn't so broken down. What do you mean? This is state of the art. Shoots the equipment. No, it isn't.
Yeah. So at this point...
Ah, do you get it? Everything's a joke and a setup.
Everything. Everything in this movie is a setup. But at this point... Cash has to head to the Cleopatra Club to try and find Tango, and oh my god, the Cleopatra Club.
The Cleopatra Club seems, when you're first walking in with the cover price and the general red light velvet vibe of it, that you're like, oh, this is like a strip club.
Right, it's a $5 cover. But in the 80s, that's like $3,000.
And we get into there, but then you see that it's like a huge stage that is, like, ringed by a bar, and then everything else is seating facing towards it. So you're like, okay, I guess this is more performance. But the person on stage is ending whatever their
Elvis thing was. They're doing a sort of Elvis routine where there's a guy, Elvis, and some woman he's singing to, and she's dancing. So they're doing it's basically...
But it's like the last 1 second of it, because the second we see them, he just gets on a motorcycle with the girl and drives upstage.
Yeah, so right away we know exactly what the... First of all, I gotta say, the bar looks like a bar from Mario Brothers, like the color scheme.
Which is great.
The number of dudes the giant dudes in the bar with ponytails is really selling the whole Mario vibe to me. But it's a standard 80s strip bar in a movie where no one actually strips. Instead... They do exotic dances for a long time and then go away without having actually... It's Flashdance Bar.
Yeah, I love the 80s bar. It was like, we're here to see hot babes, but not hot babes get naked. We want to see them do things like dance or play the drums or,
I don't know,
do interpretive macrame.
So poor Kurt Russell wandering around this bar asking for Catherine, and every single person's like, I don't know no Catherine. That's a stupid name. There's 1,000 women in here named Catherine. What's wrong with you? And that's when Terry Hatcher comes out on stage, because she's obviously Catherine, and she's doing a routine where she kind of strips. Like, she starts in a dress and ends up in a bikini top and pants.
She just gets a new jazzercise outfit.
Yeah.
That's about it.
But halfway through the routine, she walks over to a bartender, and it's the bartender's job to give her some drumsticks in the middle of her set so she can walk over to a set of hexagon drum machine pads and play drums in her jazzercise outfit on stage.
Yeah.
She's just like, drumming.
Who is paying for this, first of all? Who's like, oh man, have you heard about the Cleopatra Club? They got a lady there who doesn't really get naked and then sort of plays the drums to a song that isn't her own and dances a little, but not really.
Yeah, she kind of just like...
You're like, oh, okay.
She drums the way a karaoke singer sings. Like, yeah, she's singing, but the song already has drums in it, and you could also hear the drums the song had in it. It's a very avant-garde choice, and I'm so... I gotta go see it. And John, I gotta tell you, I know we're in the middle of COVID and everything, and it's been so long since I've been to a good strip drum performance. And it really made me hungry to go see some good old-fashioned strip drumming.
If I could just go to some good old-fashioned strip drumming, it would make my year.
Yeah, yeah, that's all I'm at. Like, maybe by late summer, August, maybe when we go to Gen Con, we can make our way out to some good old-fashioned, just classic strip drumming, and just see it, get a chance to see that.
Ugh. I mean, at least it sort of makes sense, Stallone's protectiveness of her now, when he's like, you probably shouldn't just go off with some group and perform without letting me know where you are, given that what she is performing is doing a strip drumming tour?
I mean,
I can't imagine the people who are like, yes, come with me and strip drum for us on the road. Like, that's not the kind of people you want to just let have free reign.
I mean, okay, so she's kind of doing a little bit of a teasy dance, and then she stops in the middle of the performance to do a different talent show style performance. So the only thing this is really missing is for her to be kind of a little more gothy, and also for the club to be a little darker, and then it would just be burlesque.
Because
that's pretty much what it is, right? Like, she comes out, she takes off some clothes, but not all of her clothes, and then halfway through taking off her clothes, she's like, oh, and also I can juggle or whatever. So that's pretty much what burlesque is. It's a talent show, and also you show, like, most of your boob.
Good.
Yeah. So I'm going to get a bunch of angry emails from burlesque people now.
Yes.
And they're going to be like, no, it's not that. It's a whole complex performance where we do all. And I'd be like, I know it is. I know it really. It's really hard. And I could never do it.
I get it. I get it. It's a complex performance where you get naked and juggle. I understand.
And sometimes if you can't juggle, you play big flat drums. Anyway, she's Catherine. But the reason that the whole ask for Catherine thing doesn't work is because everyone in this bar calls her Kiki.
That's right. She's Kiki. And she finds Cash and is like, oh, come with me. I've seen your picture in the paper. And, you know, Tango has told me about you. And you must be the person who's on the run. And
apparently my brother
I'll help you out.
Apparently Tango gave you really bad advice by telling you to ask for me by my real name in this club where I do not go by it.
I mean, I have to assume that he has never shown up at this club. I'm going to assume that Ray Tango has literally no idea what Catherine does.
He's just like an old 80s man. He's just like, hey, look, this is the deal. You go into that bar, you ask to speak to the manager. When you meet the manager, you give him a firm handshake, and you look him in the eye, and you say, I would like to speak to Catherine, and he will respect you.
And then, you know, a couple days later, be sure to call back and ask about Catherine again. They'll respect your tenacity.
Anyway, Catherine takes him back into the changing room where there's a bunch of topless women, because this movie works in topless women in the margins wherever it can.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of, you know, throughout this film, pictures of topless women on, like, the prison walls, or just sort of in the background of places.
Yeah, during the vehicular destruction scene, that's our introduction to Cash. A naked woman looks up from the back of a car and then ducks back down into the car again.
Yeah.
It's just like, nudity. And we get to see
just a slide whistle of titties.
And we get to see the dancer who played Elvis on stage for a split second earlier. And it's Shabadoo.
This movie.
It's everybody. Every single person. Shabadoo is one of the two guys in Breakin' 2 Electric Boogaloo. Aldolfo Quiñones.
It's amazing. Everything's amazing about this movie.
And we get a whole thing where he's like, well, I can't go out through the front and I can't sneak out through the back. Oh, because, by the way, crooked cops are in there looking.
I mean, even just regular cops, they are on the run.
Yeah, that's right. So he has to sneak out somehow. And that's when we finally get to the cross-dressing scene.
Yeah, because, you know, he sees the Shabadoo in his, like, full leather biker outfit and is like, ooh, what size do you wear? And so we think, oh, he's going to wear like a motorcycle helmet so it'll hide his face. But then they go up to the person wearing the leather and motorcycle helmet, and it's Terry Hatcher.
Yeah, and she's
and then Cash comes out in a full dress.
I think my favorite part of Terry Hatcher coming out in the motorcycle helmet is she's got the helmet down, she's getting on the bike, and they're like, hey, hold on a second, hold on, we got to talk to you. And then she reveals her face in there. Also, she has a lit cigarette, and I'm like, "What's up with the lit cigarette? Don't you have a face helmet on, and you're about to get on a motorcycle? What were you going to do with that?
Smoke it for a second.
Yeah, smoke it for a split second. But then, yeah, we get.
Well, it's there so that we can flick it at the pervert cop.
That's right. That's exactly why it's there, because that's when we get to the scene we described earlier.
Yeah. After the cop is like, hey, you ladies down for a threesome? They get to flip him off and both flick their lit cigarettes at him.
Mm-hmm. And then they drive away. And Kurt Russell even is like, hey, buddy, look right at my face. Wink. I'm Kurt Russell. Wink. And the whole time they're just like, oh, that was a couple of broads.
Those were two very cute ladies. Dykes on bikes, am I right, Captain?
Yeah. And they take, Kiki takes Cash back to her place and gives him a massage.
Yeah, but Tango shows up and he can only see the top half of Catherine, so it looks and sounds like she's having sexual relations with him.
Yeah, because he's got a slipped disc and she's trying to slip it back in. So there's all these innuendos where he's like, It's almost
back in.
I can feel it. I can feel it going inside.
Oh, harder.
Push harder.
I could do this all night.
That feels good when you push it hard like that to get it back inside. My penis is going into you. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. That was...
Your vagina is very nice. I'm sorry, what?
That's my way of describing back massages. I apologize. It's just my way. I'm Albanian, and that's Albanian for back massage. Now, we finally learn the big truth reveal. Terry Hatcher isn't Tango's girlfriend. She's his sister. He's just weirdly misogynistically protective of his sister.
And that, of course, will, from this point forward, be 80% of Tango and Cash's interactions will be the two of them being like, hey, don't fuck my sister. I want to fuck your sister.
Did you fuck my sister? You fuck my sister?
I'm not telling.
Yeah, because they never just go like, I was just giving him a back massage. Instead, they're just like, up yours, Tango. You are not privy to that information. Oh, you fuck my sister?
Well, what I do is my business.
Yeah. Your sister is very free as a person. You fuck my sister, didn't you? You fuck my sister. It's just that for the rest of the movie. Until
you fuck my wife?
Until the fucking end of the movie where Cash is like, hey, I'm going to fuck your sister. And he's like, yeah, you are, buddy. Fuck yeah, you are. Handshake, bro. That's the man who's going to fuck my sister.
I love that at this point, Tango's captain shows up and is like, hey, you've got, for some reason, 24 hours to find out who framed you, or else something?
Yeah, like, or else he's got to come back and arrest them. That's as long as he can delay arresting them, is 24 hours. And I love that they tackle the captain because they think he's a murderer, and he's just like, God damn it, get off me. And then the two of them start up with that you fuck my sister shit, and he eventually just gets tired of it. At about the same speed the movie watchers do, he finally just goes, ah, fucking shut up about this. Look, you got 24 hours.
Look, I got to give you the whole thing here. 24 hours, or else I guess cops will still be looking for you. Nothing changes, but I had to give you a time limit because, you know, it's an action movie and that's what we do.
Well, if you didn't give them a time limit, they just stand in that yard for the next 3 days talking about sister fucking. That's all. It's just him throwing motivation to them to go, like, leave that house and go do shit.
Please stop this. They're like, we won't. We'll just do it elsewhere.
Okay, we can take this show on the road. I fucked your sister. Did you fuck my sister? I fucked your sister.
So they manage to threaten Rakeen with blowing him up, and they do the bad cop, worst cop routine.
Oldest trick in the book.
We did bad cop, crazy cop.
Yeah. And so he reveals everything.
They find out Perrette exists, and they're like, let's go get him. But Perrette's, like, hideout is in the middle of what I can only describe as a
demolition, like, derby maze.
Demolition derby maze that is also currently under construction as well.
Yeah, effectively, he lives in a giant construction warehouse that is also a twisted metal stage.
Yeah, he lives in a place where, like, oh, you guys showed up in a super prototype, ultra badass, like, Batman car.
Yeah, because one of them's got a fucking guy who makes him funny technology, and it's the poor one. It's Cash. Cash is just like, oh yeah, I know this guy, and he's just constantly making me super guns and crazy, like, technology and shit.
Yeah, I know Michael J. Pollard.
Oh yeah,
who is playing Owen, who is just the, like, tinkerer for my police department, and he has come up with a bulletproof SUV with chain guns on the side and, like, super computers inside of it, and we're gonna take this and we're gonna go after him. So now we've got, like, an SUV with chain guns on the side. We are gonna be fought by dudes in monster trucks, motorcycles, and construction equipment. We are just in a twisted metal video game.
My favorite thing about
that
part is that, okay, first of all, Owen, Michael J. Pollard, who, by the way, yet another one of those that guy characters. I remembered him, I think, from Scrooged is the only thing I could put his face to.
I mean, God, he has been in so much shit. But yes, Scrooged.
Yeah. So he works out of, like, a gym. So he works in, he's like a weird tech genius, criminal sort of supply side weapon dealer man who works out of a gym, but he has spent the past couple of weeks making a super police car.
Oh, yeah. Well, he works for the police. He's the police's very own R&D guy. You know how the police have a super secret R&D level where they come up with magical gadgets?
And it's also the gym? But they're like, great, this is perfect. We can drive right to this guy's place and take him out. And I'm like, don't you need something inconspicuous? Oh, no, we'll just drive there in the coolest police truck ever made. It's got a chain gun on one side. No one will notice us.
And I just love that the entire thing, once they get to Perrette's hideout, it feels like it is both bored of what's going on and yet trying its hardest to be action-packed, because it's just explosions and car chases and gunfights and shooting things and jumping off ramps for like a good 10 minutes solid. But the whole time, the two of them are just like, you fuck my sister?
Yeah. Like, they don't care. They're fully aware that all of the good parts of this movie already happened. Even though we are literally watching a Twisted Metal scene where everyone's blowing everyone up and there's a whole bunch of, like, missile-launching police cars and shit everywhere. And it's just fucking crazy. Our main characters are both like, yeah, I'm pretty much done with this. I think we said everything we needed to.
Neither of them give a shit. They're, like, still quipping, but it just feels half-hearted at this point. Yeah. They're just like, yeah, well, you know, you got a small dick or whatever.
You all got the basic plan, right? Yeah, you got a small dick. I fucked your sister. Yeah, okay,
yeah, that's right. That's what this is.
The movie, it's amazing because the movie just keeps building and building. Like, literally, they're in a demolition derby. There are 50 cars with missile launchers chasing them and getting blown up in crazy super fires. They have a nitrous booster on their truck that lets it fucking jump. And they are using the jump to jump over other cars and shit. And the two of them are just sitting in the car like, I fucked your sister. Did you fuck my sister? And they don't fucking care. And then when they get into the building, they've got giant cartoon missile or machine guns that they use to murder James Hong and Mark Alimo.
Just immediately.
And they don't fucking...
No fanfare.
And they, again...
These guys have been the lieutenants the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, oh, hey, these guys, they're dead now.
No one fucking cares. It's amazing.
The most amazing thing to me, this entire time they've been like, well, we need to clear our name. We need to get the guy who did this. And they murder everyone who knows what happened. Like, all they have is Michael Jeter, like, with a tape of someone calling him, telling him to make a recording of them sounding like they were going to kill a guy.
Mm-hmm.
And sure, that's probably enough to get them a new trial. But, like, all of the witnesses and people that you would need to, like, show up are dead because they kill all of them in this final scene.
Yeah. It's true. And instead, they just, the end of the movie is just a shot of a newspaper where it's just like, yeah, hero cops are heroes again.
Like, the end of this, of course, Terry Hatcher has to have been taken prisoner by Perrette.
Mm-hmm. By Breon James, who survived the bad cop, worst cop, and shows up just to get shot down again right away.
And he gets a grenade in the pants, does Breon James.
Mm-hmm.
But we get Jack Palance monologuing while holding a gun to Terry Hatcher and standing in a hall of mirrors. And I was like, this is it. This is the point. This is the point for me where, like, in the movie Cats, and I just started laughing uncontrollably.
Yeah.
This is the point where I was like, oh, this movie knows exactly what's going on, doesn't it? It's trying to be like this.
Yeah.
Because we have Jack Palance monologuing about, I don't know, traps and the nature of man or whatever bullshit villains do.
He probably says Cry Havoc.
But, like, Tango and Cash are just standing there, back and forth, talking to each other, not paying attention to him at all.
Yeah, and let's make sure everyone knows that it happens in a hall of mirrors. That this guy has a hall of mirrors in his house.
He just already had it set up. Like, this isn't, oh, we chased him to a funhouse carnival. There is a sliding wall in his office that leads to a house of mirrors.
And they both just shoot him in the head. And like, again, they only stop quipping long enough to shoot him in the head and then congratulate themselves for being good at noticing details.
Well, I mean, they're talking to each other and ignoring him, and they're like, oh, I know which one it is. Ooh, I also know which one is the real one. Oh, we should shoot him in the knees. Yes, let's kneecap him so that we can take him in alive. And then both of them shoot him in the head, and I'm like, you're so dumb. You needed him alive. What are you doing?
It's cool. Don't worry about it. If you kill enough people, you get a hero cop reward.
I mean, at this point, I'm like, you guys are off of the force because you got sent to jail, which means you just showed up somewhere and you don't even have a badge to hide behind. You're like, oh yeah, we showed up and just murdered dozens of people and destroyed a shitload of property. But I'll tell you what, we definitely didn't get any more evidence out of it.
Yeah. And they both shoot him right in the head, and they're like, oh, I noticed that his ring had text on it that was backwards in all the other images, but the right way in this
one. Oh, no, it was his monogram was backwards in the reflections, mm-hmm. and his ring was on the wrong hand in the reflections for
right.
the other one.
Boy, we sure are good cops. Yeah, we are. We are very good cops. I fucked your sister.
Let's take my sister outside so we can talk about how you're not allowed to fuck her anymore.
Yeah, that's what happens. They go outside, and they're standing there with Terry Hatcher, and Cash is like, by the way, I'm going to date your sister. Hell yeah, you are.
No, even at that point, Tango's like, over my dead body, and he's like, well, I think that's fine with both of us.
And then the movie's just over. They killed everybody.
And the movie ends on a freeze-frame high-five hand grab that then turns into a picture of them doing the same thing, but hero cops restored as heroes. And I'm like, God damn, you hit every single one of these beats.
Yeah, they really didn't miss a trick. They knew every possible note to hit.
It is amazing to me.
Yeah.
This is to the buddy cop movie what I feel Night of the Creeps is to horror movies, where it's just so aware of everything, and it does it passionately and lovingly, but also fully aware of how stupid it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's mind-bending. I mean, ultimately, the movie starts to peter out towards the end. Like, you can tell that, like, I was starting to get bored, even though the characters are running around with cartoon machine guns, eliminating all the bad guys. But
yeah, by the time it gets to that, I'm bored, and so are they.
Yeah, it's hilarious, because they're like, oh yeah, we're done, we're bored with it, this has been too long, but it's still was an amazing ride right up until that point. But, you know, ultimately, it's still one of those movies that's about, you know, two cops who get to murder whoever they want. And the only thing they won't do is call other cops. Very funny shit.
It's great. So let's go ahead and do our bests and worst then. Jeff, what was your favorite moment in this movie?
Single moment in the movie. I think I might have to go with the cross-dress scene. It's a good diversion. It does not do it as mean-spirited as I was expecting it would do it.
Mm-hmm.
And it ends in a very, like, safe and not horrible way where the dumb cop gets comeuppance, and that's all it is. So I was expecting it to be much worse than it was, and it was fine. So I think by betraying my expectations and not being terrible, that was the one.
Great.
What about you?
It's really difficult to narrow it down, but I feel like I gotta go with Jack Palance and the rats the first time we see him, where he's just like, this is Tango, and this is Cash.
Yeah.
And then he kind of like nuzzles them to his face and puts them back in a box.
Mm-hmm. I really, like I was saying, it would have been way better if that was the end of it. He was like, this is Tango, this is Cash, I'm putting him away now, you'll never see him again.
I don't know why I did that.
I just needed visual aids.
But the fact that he does that scene and then like puts him in the maze, and then later on in the movie, we come back to him, and he is just nuzzling the two rats again. You're like, oh, he just really loves these rats.
Well, yeah, because we didn't even mention it, but during the Destruction Derby scene, because we're pretty much ready to be done by that point in the movie, we do constantly cut to Jack Palance, who's standing there holding the rats, but mostly just going, yeah, yeah, get him, blow him up, blow up Tango and Cash, yeah.
The fact that he is so affectionate to these rats and that has nothing to do with anything, I absolutely love.
The rats are never in danger. I kept expecting the rats to be destroyed at some point to make, like, some kind of evil point. It never happened.
Oh, yeah. because I was like, oh, okay. So at first you get them and you put them in the maze because you're like, this is my plan. But when they get out and they're like, now we need to kill him, I thought like, oh, you're going to kill the rats now. No, he just really loves those rats. Those are his pets and he loves them.
Yeah, they're just his good pet rats. He just loves rats. Don't worry about it.
All right.
Worst thing,
Worst scene in the film.
This is tricky because there's not really that much in this movie that isn't gloriously stupid. Like, it's pretty much the same level.
Everything's over the top.
Yeah, I would say it's probably the scene where they eliminate the two lieutenants when they take out Hong and Lopez. Because, I mean, those are cool actors. I wanted more from them than them just being like, oh, no, it's Tango and Cash. They got in here. Ah, we are dead.
Ah, shot.
So I was kind of hoping that could be a little cooler. And that's the worst this movie gets. I mean, granted, it probably gets worse in the stunning amount of just cop murder that gets rewarded. But, you know, it's 1989. You got to take the punches as they come.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's sad that my least favorite scene in this is probably that end Demolition Derby Twisted Metal thing, because you'd think, like, oh, shit, this is going to be an amazing, super epic thing. But it's just, it feels so pointless and boring that you're like, oh, this is just sort of like they don't care and they're murdering people just because they're there.
Yeah, it felt like they felt like they needed to force in an action set piece that was a bigger deal, like a climactic one. So they throw in this ridiculous truck battle sequence, and you're just like, this didn't need to be here. This movie's, you already got me. You already hooked me. You don't need a battle truck.
Yeah, no, it felt very perfunctory to me.
Yeah, so I don't know, gilding the lily, more or less.
All right, so now we are going to rate the movie, each of us giving it a rating from 0 to 5, which will give us a full rating out of 10. Jeff.
You know, this is, I say this from time to time about different movies, this is a perfect couch movie. Like, if you're just sitting on the couch looking for something to do, you're bored on a Saturday or whatever, and this comes on, you're probably going to watch it till it's over. Because you're like, fuck, great, better than nothing. But it's not. It's like a 3.5 for me. I think that's right about where it's at. Like, I don't know that I'm going to actively seek this sort of thing out again in the future. This feels just about right. 3.5.
All right.
You?
I definitely liked it much more than that. Mm-hmm. I feel like this is the kind of movie where I feel like I would specifically tell people to watch this.
Oh, okay.
Like, I would tell people, like, oh my God, you have to watch this. It is ridiculous. I'm going to give it a 4.5. It's not, you know, perfect by any means, but it is, that's the whole reason, is it is so ludicrous and over the top in every way. And the fact that it is packed to the gills with character act. I'm just like, it is an experience to watch this movie. And I feel like if I ever have a movie that I am certain that I will tell people, you need to sit down and watch this, and I am also willing to sit down and watch it with you again.
All right.
It's got to be a 4 or above.
Okay,
for
well,
me.
Then what is it?
4.5, baby.
4.5. You know what? I don't think.
There you go.
I got no complaints about that. I think that's perfect for you.
Eight out of 10.
8 out of 10. That's just about what I would have hoped for.
Yeah. There you go. Thank you so much for joining us on this absolute bombastic nonsense journey through Tango and Cash. If you like the show and you want to support us, of course, you can go over to patreon.com/systemmastery and join us. Any amount will help keep the show going, supports us. But if you sign up at that $5 level, you can unlock TV Mastery. And we are going through The Littlest Hobo right now. Just some the greatest hits of Canadian 70s and early 80s TV show about a hero dog. That is mind-bendingly weird.
I cannot wait to talk about it again, because the first, I mean, granted, we're never going to stand up to the heights of the first episode because we had Alex on, but I cannot wait to get into this next episode because I've already watched it, and it is just as crazy. The show is awesome.
Oh, it's amazing. Mm-hmm. The stuff that they do to make a show about a German Shepherd who helps people into the most, like, sitting there, mouth open, goggle-eyed, going, what is happening? It is incredible to me what they can pull with this show.
Yeah, yeah. And how much, like, incredible story they can pull out of this dog who can mostly go places on command and paw at people on command.
Oh, yeah. It's great. And you should definitely join us as we continue to go through The Littlest Hobo. There's going to be some more special guests in the future. We've got great stuff planned for this season. So join us, won't you, at patreon.com/systemman. And until then, we'll be back in another couple weeks with more movie mastery. But you guys have a good one.